Hello, everybody, and welcome to Fortress Comic News, episode 300 and nice.
Nice. 300 and nice.
I'm one of your hosts, Chris, along to my co-host here, Mike. What's going on, Mike?
Nice. Episode 369, dudes.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many jokes you can make about it. You can do the Bill and Ted. 69, dude. Love it. Welcome to the show, everybody. We have Jonathan Heydrich on. Coming back for the nice episode. I'm going to talk about his book Brackish in a little bit here, but yeah,
love that dude.
Yeah. He's such a cool guy. A book about Florida. That's not a joke for once, which is, you know, like you said, I mean, the Florida man thing's really popular, like it sells, but it is interesting to have like a drama, serious book set in that area, which is cool.
Yeah, I mean, I brought up in the thing, but like, just there's a scene building up there. Like, Scout Comics is down there, Heydrich, Gibb, a bunch of other guys are down there. Like, MegaCon's a huge con every year. That's a lot of fun if you're ever down there during that time. So yeah, Florida needs some respect in the comics industry, and hopefully this helps.
Respect. They got baseball now. They got comics. Awesome. Maybe I will retire there one day. I don't know. We'll see.
It doesn't help that they have the Dolphins. I mean, the Miami Dolphins. Yeah,
that does suck. Sorry, guys.
Welcome to Football Podcast with Chris and Mike.
We're going to talk football on the podcast. I don't actually have any comic book stories this week. Nothing really. I do have to watch Christ on Infinite Earths Part 2. I have not done that yet. But I am fixing to watch tonight because it is Sunday when we record, folks. A little glimpse behind the curtain. I'm going to watch the new Henry Cavill movie. The Ungentlemanly Like Warfare something is available to rent. They're killing Nazis, Chris, so I think it's right up your alley.
I think that's on Netflix, isn't it?
I saw it was to rent on Amazon right now, but it's the...
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. And you're right. It's available to rent on Prime.
So I'll probably rent that tonight. But just because they kill Nazis. And I guess it's based on somewhat of a true story. I don't think it was that exciting. And Henry Cavill probably wasn't part of it. But I think it's a thing that happened.
No, Henry Cavill's there. He's immortal.
Okay. Okay.
No, that movie looked cool. I wanted to see it. But I apparently just don't. Dude, Planet of the Apes came out this weekend. Didn't see it.
Oh, yeah. That came out. Yep. Yeah, I kept seeing all these interviews for him. I'm like, is this movie out? Oh, yeah, it's out. I haven't even looked at the reviews or anything. Have not.
Reviews don't matter, Mike. It's got apes.
It's got
That's
apes.
All I care Chris about.
Is Chris is there. He's there for the apes, everybody. another fun fact, I believe Godzilla Minus One is available to rent. So I'm going to rewatch that movie because I loved it so much.
Is it just rent? I thought they said it was going to be streaming on...
I don't know where it's streaming.
Prime.
Dude, I can't figure out where things are streaming or what. You might not have to pay for it. I just see things that pop up on my feed for either renting or getting able, or if they're part of the stream. I don't know.
Oh, I got hoodwinked.
Yeah. See,
it is available to stream on Prime,
but you got to rent
in Japan.
Oh, well, if you do some crazy fuck shit with a VPN, you might be able to watch it.
$3 to I'll rent it.
Is it only $3 to rent?
$3 to rent, I'll rent it. Oh, in HD. In HD. Okay. It's only $10 to buy it.
Buy it. Every
this
time.
Is the correct like movie, right? I mean, it just says minus one now, so I'm getting nervous.
It's not the same
movie. This is not the same movie. David Solomon, James Whitmore, and Robert Montgomery are three soldiers from an Army Reserve unit called to fight in Afghanistan.
No, this
and then
is not...
Godzilla appears.
Yeah, no, that's not a thing. Nope. Chris, you would have rented this movie. They're like talking about the Middle East. You're like, wow, this is not what I expected.
When's Godzilla show up?
Yeah, when does Godzilla show up?
Right below it to rent, Godzilla versus Space Godzilla.
Oh yeah, that's the better movie in my opinion.
So now I gotta see Godzilla Minus One. Welcome to googling through
Yeah, we're
Amazon.
Just gonna Google the whole episode. The The confusing part about the minus one was like, why was it called minus one? And I think it's because it's not even a zero movie. It's a complete reboot of all the Godzilla lore. I think that's what they were going for, but
that's what I heard, that it's basically them like kind of
retelling the original,
rebooting
story.
The whole thing. Like, there's gonna be a new continuity following this.
Yeah, which is cool because they kind of like, with every Godzilla movie where they nuke Godzilla and they're like, oh shit, that didn't work. It's like they kind of just hand wave over that part. They're like, all right, we did the nuke thing. We're not doing that anymore. It's been there, happened before. You've seen it every movie.
If you're looking at cuts,
it's on some streaming service. That's all I know. Somewhere. You could probably rent
it. Let's see. That's Godzilla versus Kong. That's not
out yet. It's not Godzilla versus Kong, Chris. The new one is Godzilla X Kong.
No. This link in a thing that says how to watch Godzilla minus one, you link on Prime Video and it sends you to Godzilla versus Kong.
The original one?
Yes.
What the fuck?
I'm done. We're not doing this on the podcast anymore, Mike.
Yeah, goodbye. We're moving into TV news, folks. DC Films announced they have cast Frank Grillo, who's now walking between worlds from Captain America. He was the skull guy. What was that villain's name?
Crossbones.
Yeah, Crossbones. Who we probably know, right there, as the MCU's Crossbones, to play Rick Flagg Sr. in the upcoming Peacemaker Season 2 and for Creature Commandos. So this is interesting because the announcement was like, okay, he's going to be first in Creature Commandos as animated. And like we had heard, the voice actors are now going to jump into live action for Season 2 of Peacemaker. So interesting stuff here, Chris. So Creature Commandos, going to have to watch it, which I was going to plan on watching it anyways. But he kind of, it's just kind of weird because he doesn't look that much older than the guy who plays Rick Flagg. Joel Kinnaman, I think, is the guy who plays him.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some comic book science going to be going on here. Because isn't Creature Commandos like a World War II thing?
Yeah.
Or am I misreading that?
I thought maybe it started in World War II. I don't know. Yeah. They'll spray his hair with some gray spray paint or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think it's easier to age someone up than to de-age. So yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
The real story here to me is, and I'm sure they've like said this in the past, but like now it's kind of like in my head solidified, confirmed. The true beginning of the new DC universe is the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, has to be.
Obviously Peacemaker is crossing over with what's going on in the DC cinematic universe.
Yeah.
So that gets me excited. I loved Peacemaker and I loved
The Suicide Squad.
I am thrilled about this news. And it also kind of confirmed that Peacemaker Season 2 is right around the corner. At least filming is right around the corner. So
yeah,
it's been way too long since that show was out.
I know. That show is so good. And I know James Gunn posted a photo of like a selfie of like in the reflection of the back of John Cena's helmet when he was like sitting there filming. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So... Yeah, the casting's fine. I mean, no offense to anybody, but Rick Flagg Sr. is not really that complex of a character.
No.
So, sure, it works. He looks intimidating.
He's going to be an asshole.
Yeah, like, the real news here to me is just that, like, things are really moving along with stuff that isn't Superman in the DCU.
Yeah. Yep. This is finally happening. Amazon announced that the 3 years after its announcement and moving from studio to studio, there's a release date for Batman Caped Crusader animated series. It will hit the service on August 1st and the entire season will drop at once. It's almost like, okay, listen, we're done. We're going to drop it. We wash our hands of it. We don't want nothing to do with this project.
The exact opposite, because I think it was picked up for 2 seasons.
Was it? They're doing another season?
Pretty
really?
Sure. Yeah.
That's weird.
So it's really cool to see Bruce Timm back.
Yeah.
I wish the whole crew came back, but like, cool. Bruce Timm's back.
Yep.
He's doing a new Batman thing. I don't mind the art style to it. it'll never be the animated series again. Like that, we're just not in that world.
Yeah.
It's going to be really weird to watch like a true animated series, like something that's being billed as a spiritual successor to what they did back in the 90s, the animated series.
Right.
And I think it's really going to sink in when I watch this show, like Kevin Conroy's gone.
Yeah.
So
who did they, Kevin didn't voice this, right?
No, the last thing, well, he has something in the Crisis, but the last thing he did was Suicide Squad.
Okay. But I wonder if it's the dude, Jensen Ackles, that did it.
That would be great. I think he's really good as Batman.
Yeah, I like his voice lately and stuff. But I know they've like played around with a few different people.
That's right. I forgot that. Ed Brubaker is the head writer, and he wrote episode one. And Greg Rucka is also like in the
writing room. That's pretty good.
Cast and crew.
Let's see who did voice. I just want to know who voiced Batman.
Yeah, that's what I want to know. It's just giving me writer. Who cares about writers?
No, yeah, don't want the writer. Yeah. We don't know people that came up with the stuff. That's boring shit.
Bruce Timm, Matt Reeves is an executive producer. Okay.
Wait, what?
Yeah, apparently.
Like. The Batman Matt Reeves? What the fuck? That's very strange. Is he just maybe they just tie his name to everything involving Batman now?
This is like the only cast member is Malcolm Vaughn.
Okay. But
he's only billed for 3 episodes and then don't see anything else on IMDb.
So they haven't released a cast.
Probably not. Yeah.
That'll be a surprise.
But there's images out. Like, I like the design for Batman. Mm-hmm. There's a character that I'm assuming is Harley Quinn because it's a Harlequin. But it's a different design.
Yep.
That's interesting. I'm all around. I'm excited for this, and I'll be down for it. It's just it's definitely the beginning of a new age of animated Batman.
Well,
in my eyes,
I think was it the last time Bruce Timm was involved? We had was the Killing Joke movie.
Oh, yeah, when Batman and Batgirl banged on the rooftop.
Roof. Yeah, we don't forget those things. So as long as that, I mean, that's the bar, Chris.
The Arkham games.
Yeah.
Like, he's had more hits than misses, Mike, all right?
I'm just saying, nobody forgets. Nobody forgets. Let's stop fighting crime to bang it out real quick.
I don't forget because I love all the Alan Moore fans that are mad about that, and I constantly bring it up to them. Oh, yeah, I love Killing Joke. Yeah, I love the part where Batman and Batgirl bang on the rooftop.
I think the movie was just the best way to really, really flesh out the story.
What's sad about that was the thing that him and Mark Hamill were like, we'll come back for this.
Yeah.
And then it will always be remembered for that scene.
Yep.
Yeah.
Damn.
Other than that, it wasn't a bad movie, to be honest.
Yeah. X-Men 97, Episode 9.
Yeah, shit got real.
Oh, okay.
Magneto creates Asteroid M. He goes to the X-Men and is just like, who's with me? And Rogue and the other dude from New Mutants, I forget his name now, go with him. And that's when the X-Men are like, we got to figure this out. And they have to fight a war on two fronts. So they got to fight the Sentinels over here. They got to deal with Asteroid M before Magneto just like kills everybody. Magneto's gone. Which is a weird, like, 360 for Magneto, going from, like, being a kid in a concentration camp to just, like, hey, let's do mass genocide.
Yeah. Yeah. Really comes
full circle. It's in the comics, everybody. It's just always weird when it comes across to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so the X-Men are fighting Magneto and Asteroid M. Rogue and the other dude are there. They're going back and forth. And Wolverine's just... So this moment at the end, this is a huge spoiler for this episode, everybody. We always joke that Wolverine has these giant metal claws and he never like stabs anybody. He stabs Magneto right through the chest. Just comes right behind him and bam. Wow. Gives this awesome speech about that hints to his history about like I've been in many wars and blah 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 and this all that. And Magneto survives the stabbing long enough to have a huge cliffhanger where he pulls the adamantium out of Wolverine's body.
Oh, shit.
And that's how they leave it. And I'm just sitting there like, the fuck?
Yeah, was that the season finale?
It is not. I think there's at least one more episode.
Oh,
so.
Shit.
Yeah, it's been crazy. And wow. Magneto's back in the classic costume. No more of the giant M, nice. Which I always thought was a stupid costume.
Yeah.
The
original one's the best.
Yeah, he's got the helmet on and everything.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. So, nice. Yeah, nice. X-Men 97's just such a good show.
Yeah, I got to catch up on it. I watched the first episode. I've got to watch some more of it.
Yeah. It gets, I'll say this, I thought the first couple episodes were okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like really too into the weeds, but it ramps up quick after that. So if you get to the episode where they're on Genosha,
mm-hmm.
and you're not hooked, I would say that you're not going to get hooked, because that's really the one where I was just like, holy shit.
Right. Things start happening. Delicious and Dungeon episode 19 that I watched, Chris did not get to this week. I will say nothing really huge happens. It is a very like horror-esque episode. So there's a couple parts of it. There's
interesting.
Like,
that's the episode you watched.
Yeah. That I ended up watching that one. I didn't realize that, but like, so first half of the episode, they like, the last episode ended with that like crew members showing up and they have a curse on them, so they fight this curse, and then the second half of the episode is and there's some, I think he makes some mushroom risotto during that, which is pretty cool. And then there's a second half of the episode where they're like trapped in the dreams of like the mage, and so they like fight this like demon thing in her dreams that's like this like almost like a Cthulhu-esque monster thing, which is really cool, and that's kind of how the episode resolves. But overall is a good episode, you know.
Cool. I look forward to watching it.
Yeah. Movie news. This was pretty huge. James Gunn released an Instagram image of Superman in costume, so we'll have it right here, and with a giant laser beam behind him, Chris. So okay, first off, I heard a lot of people complaining about the costume doesn't look like it's a tight fit. I have to imagine, okay, because the image that we got of Superman is him like putting on his boots. First off, if the city's in shambles and getting blown up, why are you taking the time to put your boots on this slowly? Like, let me sit down and put my boots on.
It's really important to keep up with appearances, Mike.
It just pokes the fun at like, oh, you know, the city's being destroyed. Let me put on my costume. get right out there. But the people saying, oh, bunching up and stuff, I really think this is an attempt from James Gunn at being like, okay, every superhero, every Superman image we've ever been released is like him standing with his chest puffed out and like very stoic and like a statuesque image. This is a more, and what my interpretation of this image is we're getting a more down-to-earth, realistic, or human side Superman that isn't going to be like portrayed as a god in this movie.
Remember, the one of the big influences is All-Star Superman.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. So but I think that aside, I like the costume. You can see the red trunks are there, Chris, just barely you can see them. But the more important thing is the purple blast behind him is a very Brainiac-esque color blast that we've seen in all the comics.
Yes. So real quick, my like thoughts of all of that is people have too much free time.
Yeah, yeah.
This to me is very obviously a promotional image. Like, I don't think this is a scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Like room is and everything, like it's probably in the movie. It's either an apartment or the Daily Planet or something.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't suspect we're gonna see him like, oh, I gotta put my boots
no,
on.
No, I don't think that'll be in the movie. No.
And
no.
And we're also early in it. So like, I don't think that's necessarily the final like fit either.
Yeah.
I think this is literally them just like, let's get something out there to get.
I like the cape and collar. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
The symbol's pretty cool.
I like everything about it. It kind of reminds me of Cavill's outfit, but like you can obviously tell there's trunks.
Yeah, the red trunks are back. The yellow belt.
Yeah, and there's like subtle differences. I mean, the Superman costume's hard to like really do big differences with.
Yeah.
Like it's
right.
It was perfected the first time. Like we don't really need to keep going back.
Yeah.
If that's Brainiac, fuck yeah.
Yeah, let's go. Like,
more Brainiac love, please. Mm-hmm. I was also reading a thing about it being the planet from All-Star Superman. That it has very similar.
Yeah.
Like, but the colors are different, mm-hmm. but the imagery is similar in how All-Star Superman did it.
Yep.
So there's a lot there. I just, James Gunn says, get ready. Bro, I'm already ready.
Like, I'm ready. I got my boots on. Like, I've been ready, dude.
I want this movie so bad. I want everything to kind of kick off.
You said you were writing the movie. I was ready.
Yeah, like, I heard James Gunn and DCU, like, I want the DCU to be good, so let's do this.
Yeah. So I think really cool. And James Gunn's very aware of the fan base and how to get them all riled up.
Yeah.
Which is the best part. MCU casting for the upcoming Fantastic Four movie. We have two new cast members announced for parts of the film. Pretty crazy. John Malkovich has been added as an undisclosed role. Interesting.
Herbie the Robot. I'm telling you.
You think so?
Book it.
I was thinking Doctor Doom, but he might. I don't know how. Like,
no.
If they just use his voice, he's old, right? John Malkovich is getting up there.
Maybe. I don't know if he has the. Because John Malkovich has like a somewhat comedic background.
Yeah. Which
a very comedic background. But, and he has kind of a funny voice. So I think he would be like interesting as the robot.
An
like
AI robot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we have Ralph Ineson as. Cast as Galactus. So we're getting Galactus in this film already, Chris.
Yeah, which we kind of knew, but
yeah,
now it's like confirmed. And
Ralph Ineson I think has a very good voice. He has a very like deep voice from what I remember. He's so latest stuff, I mean, he was in The Witch, one of my favorite horror movies. He plays the father. He's in The Green Knight. He's been in a lot of indie horror, but he did.
He's also in The Omens, I believe.
He was in The Omens. He was in Guardians of the Galaxy, I guess. I don't remember that.
Oh, really? Who do you play?
That's a good question. Doesn't tell me, but it must have been some like side character. But he was in Harry Potter, so he's been in some big role stuff. But yeah, that's cool. I think for Galactus, you need to have like this bellowing, loud voice.
And he's going to be CG'd it's going to be like the Hulk, like,
yeah,
it's going to be a giant CG monster. The fact that they cast somebody, it was just like, all right, so we learned our lesson, we're not doing giant cloud, like,
yeah, we're not going to do that. He was in The Last Jedi as a First Order officer, okay.
They did that a lot with because Kevin Smith was a First Order stormtrooper.
Oh man, this dude, he was a Ravager pilot in Guardians of the Galaxy, so he's on like these like D-list roles where he doesn't even have names. And then so he's in Guardians of the Galaxy, he was in Kingsman the Secret Service as a policeman, he did voices in like Assassin's Creed. This dude has been all over. Oh yeah, that's right, he was in Game of Thrones as one of the main characters. Okay. And he's done just a lot of voices because he has like a very deep voice. So he's done a lot of like demonic voices for horror movies and stuff like that. Good for him though. This is like a big, like this is a huge role.
Yeah. It's a payday.
Yeah. This is a huge step up for him. I mean, he's done a lot of indie stuff and voice acting, but holy shit. Like this is Galactus.
Yeah. And it's not a one and done villain. Like you don't kill Galactus.
No, no.
You just kind of defeat Galactus and hope he doesn't show up again.
Yeah, he'll come back one day.
So he'll have another a shot at the pie here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was great casting and really like, I'm loving that we're getting news again, but it's just getting me ramped right back up for wanting these movies to be good.
And not for nothing here, but it is a good idea to pick a more, I would say, seasoned veteran actor that's been in the industry for a while that doesn't have any drama to make as your focal point.
Well, dude, you never know because Majors, we didn't know all this was going on when he was fixed.
I mean, he was an up-and-coming actor. I mean, he was fairly young. They were putting out a lot of stuff fairly quickly. But this guy, they're like, this guy earned it. It's like when you put Willem Dafoe as, oh, man, I want Willem Dafoe as the villain. That would have been a great Galactus.
I still want Willem Dafoe as the Joker, but that's never going to happen.
Oh, my God. I know. Yeah, they gave it to that fucking Irish guy. Anyways, yeah, I'm super pumped for that. I've seen this guy in a lot of movies, and I've heard his voice in a lot of movies, and good for him. I think this is a huge role.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I see the Fantastic Four as like the new starting point for the MCU. Yeah. Like, this is really a place for them to plant their foot down and say, like, here we are. Let's mm-hmm. go forward. Yeah. And the casting's been great. And I have all the faith in the world this is going to be an awesome movie. So I really hope, because I think if I remember correctly, these two come out like fairly close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it would make me feel the way I felt back in like
right
Captain America Winter Soldier days if like both of these movies were great.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah,
it'd be so I'd be cool. Really happy about that.
So
all right, everybody, we're gonna jump to this awesome interview we have with Mr. Jonathan Hedrick, and we'll see you all on the other side.
All right, everybody, we got another very special guest, a returning very special guest. Everybody, welcome back to the show, Jonathan Hedrick. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, of course. It's been maybe about a year, I think.
Close to it, yeah. Mostly. I think it was when I was the Spill Blood campaign, which was running like last summer sometime.
Yep. Yeah, and then the Dream Book.
Dream Master,
yep. Because that's got a few issues out now, right? It's
issue 5 came out last year, and we're working on the artwork is going on for volume 2, and I've been writing volume 3. So nice. Dream Master coming down the pipe.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, Mike's I love that
excited.
Book.
He loves that book.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think I gotta pick up issue 4 and 5. I haven't grabbed those yet. Awesome. But yeah, which it's all available on your website, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have links to a couple of like sets on my website, and my website also has links to like publishers' web stores too. So
awesome.
I don't like to just monopolize that.
Yeah,
so you can pretty much find. My website's a good hub to get everything that is Jonathan Hedrick.
Nice. And Chris,
good hub
Chris,
to get all the comics you need.
Yeah, exactly. There. It's all the only comics you need. and Chris was so nice to grab me when he was in Florida to grab me that signed copy.
Nice.
So yeah,
now he's a pretty okay guy.
Yeah, he's all right.
I try once in a while.
So we're here to talk about Brackish today.
Mm-hmm.
The Kickstarter is going on right now, which, speaking of Florida, has some ties to Florida.
Yes.
And that's where you reside, right? So maybe a little bit of a personal connection to this book.
Oh yeah, big time. Yeah, I really wanted to do a story that, you know, we know swamps from Swamp Thing and Man Thing, but something that was grounded in reality that took place in, you know, the Florida swamps that I know. So I'm a big fan of Stephen King, and he says write what you know, and mm-hmm. a lot of his stories take place in Maine, and I'm like, you know, let me do a story where, you know, I can imagine myself actually being in. And that's, you know, where Brackish came from.
So it's the swamplands of Florida. Now, I did one of those swamp boat rides through the Everglades. Is that like, is that where your thought is this book is taking place?
It's like a fictional area of the Everglades, I would say. One that, you know, doesn't exist. So don't go try looking for this Brackish area.
Yeah.
But in the story, it's close to, you know, very saltwater side of the state, and also the freshwater, you know, a more middle side of the state, the center side. So, you know, in between is that brackish area that these two families are fighting over for generations.
Okay.
So that's where the story comes place, you know, and I've pulled from, you know, a little bit of Florida legends and the culture, and I just thought that there would be a cool comic book there. Comic books are great. There's so many genres, but we see a lot of superhero, horror, sci-fi, but we don't really see drama that much.
Yep.
And I think it was time to do one for myself.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah, I remember when I was down there 2-3 years ago, doing like one of those hiking. Well, what you all down there consider a hiking trail?
A slight incline.
Zero degrees above sea level.
So, John, come up to my neck of the woods and we'll do some hiking. Yeah. But it was through like one of the swamps and everything. And one of the coolest things is like people don't realize like the alligators just, they don't do shit. They just kind of sit there. You could literally be within like swiping distance where that thing was pissed off enough. It could take me down. And it was just kind of chilling there, having a good time. It was a really cool scene.
It's so nonchalant down here to see a gator. sometimes it'll just be one on the sidewalk. And like, there's no like, bodies of water around here. Where'd you come from, dude? How'd you get this far with those little stubby little legs? You know, but these raccoons and armadillos can't make it across the street for the life of them. But it's very wild down here for sure.
And the every time I've gone there, I mean, I've always heard the story of like, or the rule, you know, every body of water has a a gator in it. So like.
Take that for you know, for what it's worth. Even like someone's swimming pool, you know, check that thing at night, you know, make sure nothing crawled into it.
And
if it's like a real body of water, like a unman-made thing, natural body of water, you better be careful.
That's the place where my parents lived down there. It's on a golf course, and like even the little puddles in the golf course. You're just walking by. It's like, oh, look at that bastard.
And they'll just hang out in the same spot for days. Just like chilling. They're okay. You know, they just do their thing.
The and I would say, I mean, it always presents a sort of like suspense, I would guess, out of like other places that I've been. So.
Right.
And did you kind of build that into the story at all? I mean, I know.
The setting is really going to have an impact in this story throughout the series. It's going to constantly be almost like its own character. You know, where this takes place is a very important part of the story. It wasn't like this will be a pretty, you know, background to the story. No, it makes sense and it has purpose. So I'm having a lot of fun with it because it, you know, it feels home, you know, for the most part. You know, I mean, I don't live in a proper swamp, but it's pretty swampy. But, you know, I grew up in those areas where, you know, it was just a hop, skip and a jump until you were in that type of area. And, you know, I ran around with no shoes on and had some close calls swimming in those fresh, you know, water lakes and
I'd be a little too terrified to jump in the water.
Well, when you're a kid though, when you have that invincible, you know, spirit, you don't even think about it, you know, until you get out and you're like, oh wow, there was a gator in there.
Yeah, no big deal.
That's one of the things I liked about it when I was reading through it was the setting of it, because we always like, we know about different scenes throughout the country. And we're speaking to the United States audience, but throughout the country, like different comic scenes, like there's obviously the New York comic scene.
Right.
And like you got the Oregon scene and this and that. Yeah. There's like a pretty good one going on down in Florida right now.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't get enough attention and is because it's been building up and kind of in the indie scene more or less. And I like to see that, like, I mean, we know about the book Florida Man that recently got published and people have been talking about, but like, other than that, there's not a whole lot that really represents that area. And Florida Man's more of a comedic take on all that stuff. Where this is more of a serious, like, no, like, we got something cool down here. Look at what we have. And that was my favorite part of the book, was the setting and knowing that you were taking the loving care of presenting, you know, that scene and that area to the world through your art.
Thank you. Because, like I mentioned, you know, we know Swamp Thing and Man Thing and, you know, but those are supernatural type stories that are great. You know, I'm a huge, huge Swamp Thing fan. But I mean, there's also a very romantic side of those books. And I wanted to, you know, lean into that more than anything else.
Right. So you said more drama and romance involved. So there's a couple of characters we follow in the story, right?
Right. Yeah. So we follow mostly Remy Tapper, who comes from the freshwater side of the swamp, and Jody Saltzman, whose family is been living large from the tourism on the saltwater side.
Okay.
They meet, by accident. They don't know who each other are, and they fall in love. And we see that we're going to see that over issues, how much that peels back this onion of history between mm-hmm. the two families, and how things that were like swept underneath the rug finally get pushed back into everyone's eyesight, and it just reawakens the mm-hmm. all the bad blood after years of everything being cool for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, I was asked to do a pull quote for the book, and I've been trying to like figure out what, 'cause I'm really bad at pull quotes. Like,
so am I.
I finished reading it, and I was just like, and you tell me if this is good or not. Okay. It felt like the Florida redneck meet cute with gators.
I like that one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
that works for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the book was. Like, we got introduced to the characters, and then they have a chance meeting, and it ends in kind of this moment, which I thought was a really great moment to end the issue on, because you're getting to know everybody. You learn a little bit of the background. You know, there's like there's beef or whatever, and then these two interact, and just the way they interact with their families as well, you can tell they're kind of the outsiders of their family on top of that.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of like different things going on here that kept me interested going into the second issue.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for pointing that out. It's a good setup. You know, that's what it is. That's issue one should serve as the hook to get you to read issue two. Have a lot of one shots that people are like, oh man, I would love to have a issue two for that. I'm like, yeah, well, that was a one shot.
Yeah, right.
But so those folks, that are that want more, this is where you're gonna get it. I started with this being maybe a 5-issue miniseries, but mm-hmm. I'm already plotting out, volume two and more. So,
Just because you brought it up earlier, like what Stephen King says, you write what you know or where you've grown up. As you were writing it, did you compare to the other stuff like Quicksand, Dream Master, Recount, that stuff? Did you feel less of like a stress or strain to make more of the story, because it's like, oh, this is something you've been involved in and it kind of came more naturally to you, or was it still the same amount of work?
Yeah, I would say it's this equivalent amount of creativity having to be put into it, just from a different lens, with like Recount, that was, very grounded in reality story, but it required a lot of facts too. I was researching, is there a pool in the White House? And if this person, died, who would fall in place, in the leadership of our democracy? And I'm sure I'm on some type of FBI watch list from all those Google searches.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I'm on at least 4, so don't feel
bad. Yeah. Who isn't nowadays?
Yeah, I know. Come on.
Yeah. But yeah, with writing Brackish, since these are younger characters, I had to make sure it didn't come across as this, 40-year-old man writing a story. What a 40-year-old thinks that kids sound like nowadays.
Right.
So,
right.
That's challenging. I can pull back to how I was when I was a kid, but when I was a kid, there wasn't cell phones and social media,
right,
things like that. So that can be really challenging to make that sound organic to a modern reader, even though that's not the target audience per se. The audience is various ages that I'm hoping would pick this up, but I still wanted to make it not sound forced.
Mm-hmm. It's understandable. Mm-hmm. That's probably the part I would struggle with too, is like, how do younger people speak now?
Right. Yeah. Dialogue is tough in almost any story. You have to make it you have to make dialogue count. And,
right.
You don't want people to just say things just to say them. Dialogue always has to have a purpose. You can add a panel just to kind of like show something, you know, looks cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, the dialogue needs to have some type of, you know, meaning to the story, or you're just wasting artwork, you're wasting lettering and all right. the other factors.
Yeah. $1 million idea to any like young entrepreneur out there, make a app that's a dictionary to all the things you young people say.
Yeah.
And I'm only in my 30s, man. I still feel like a boomer when you talk to me.
Right.
Sometimes I hear shit. I'm like, I
have no clue.
I catch myself too. I'm like, God, I sound like Clint Eastwood in Gran Turismo.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah. Oh man.
I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
They had a movie about that guy and he sucked.
Right. You know what happens to that guy in the end?
Yeah. I don't want to be him. That's awesome. Let's talk about the Kickstarter a little bit and what we got going on for offering. So you have a few variant covers here, right?
Oh yeah. You know, there's the cover A by interior artist Riccardo Ficini, who knocked it out of the park. And then my wife Francesca, who's an artist, I asked her for some recommendations on artists, and she recommended Tina Valentino and Roberta Ingranata, both super talented Italian artists. I mean, all three of them are actually Italian artists.
Oh wow.
Tina and Roberto have done fantastic things with other publishers, Zenoscope, Boom, IDW. So, they really brought their A game to this. And I'm super happy with how those covers turned out.
Yeah, the C cover here, that's Roberta
Ingranata.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's like that, stained glass window style.
Right, that very Art Nouveau. Wow, when she showed that to me, I was blown away.
I noticed a set, like a theme with the colors of the book, and I think it's kind of fitting and for a Swamplands, right? Is more this turquoise, bluish green style, seafoam green, right?
Aqua blue, aqua green. Yep. Yeah, I mean, I can't take credit for the great graphics for this. That was all handled by Metal Ninja Studios, the crowdfunding publisher.
Yeah, you
know, and they got a team of, you know, fantastic graphic designers. So, I mean,
that's cool.
When I design my own Kickstarter pages, I'm literally using like the Word and Paint
and
the snippet tool and just kind of like gluing things together.
Yeah, right.
Kind of a cool like segue, like quick little segue. Is you teamed up with Metal Ninja Studios on this. What directed you to work with them on this one?
Well, I had already hired Joel Rodriguez, you know, the CEO of Metal Ninja Studios, to letter it. I worked with him on Recount Preamble and Space Cadet, and we've been good friends for a long time. He's also Florida based as well. And, you know, I was getting to the point where I'm like, hey, man, I'm ready to launch this. You know, can I get the files from you and blah, blah, blah. And he said, absolutely. But let me throw something out at you real quick.
Yeah.
And he, you know, explained to me how Metal Ninja Studios is looking to expand into the publishing arena, and they would handle the crowdfunding campaign, including the fulfillment. And I was like, wow, that's actually, you know, that's a big deal. You know, without me having to pay for them to run it or pay for them to fulfill it, it's just, they take out the funds to fulfill that. And then we split the what's left over, and that's fine by me. You know?
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
That is like so much weight off my shoulders. And you know, every campaign I've done before this, I felt like I was carrying all the weight, with exception of sometimes your artist will be kind enough to retweet you. You know, like, oh, thanks, guy. I hope that didn't break your back. You can tell I'm butthurt about that from the past. But
for the listeners right now, a testament to that is the pile of boxes behind you that you're still fulfilling Kickstarters, right? I mean, that's be a lot.
My last Kickstarter's done. This is just the leftover material, you know?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's it's a never ending cycle though, you know.
Yes, right.
This thing, when you're a comic book creator, you have to have shipping supplies. It just,
yep.
I got good. I could probably work for the post office now and just like walk in and be like, understand the job. Like, I don't need to watch your training videos. I know everything. Yep. I know more than you do.
Yeah. You're telling them how to package things.
right.
To the U.S. Postal Service, if there's like a self-checkout just for comic creators.
Yeah.
Just for Kickstarter people.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I got it down to where I do everything at home. They pick it up at my front door. I don't even have to leave the house anymore. I have a printer. I do everything off stamps.com. I got the fancy printer and labels. I have the supplies sent to me through Amazon, and
that's awesome.
Yeah, I can totally hermit out and just do this thing. Oh yeah, well, when Joel mentioned the thing with them kind of acting like a crowdfunding publisher, that was a no-brainer. I was like, absolutely, I could use all the help I can get. And great. Don't have to feel so alone in it. So, yeah, it's a great benefit.
That's interesting to see third parties jumping in, acting as like the fulfillment center, mm-hmm. almost like what Zoop does, but without Zoop.
right. Yeah, with a bigger platform like Kickstarter.
Yeah,
I think we're going to see more of that. I think we're going to see more people expanding and wanting to turn over crowdfunding campaigns a little faster to run more throughout the year. And even the publishers that are already in the direct market, maybe pull back from there and you know, do these crowdfunding campaigns, which I mean, we've already seen that for years with, you know, several publishers, but I think it's going to happen more frequently.
Definitely. And so, yeah, as we're going through to kind of swing back to the campaign itself, what I found interesting, so we talk about the variant covers. There's also this Swamp Life variant cover.
I think that's so cool. That?
Yeah.
So that's going to make this be like this faux leather alligator skin cover using the UV, embossed type layer on
like
on
a coating over the top of it. Yep.
Yeah. When they told me that idea, I was so in. I'm like, that is awesome. I love, you know, I'm a sucker for 90s cover gimmicks.
Oh, hell yeah.
I'm not a sucker for like ratio variants and, you know, the millionth art germ cover or anything like that. But if you do a bullet hole in the middle of the comic book, or, you know, you can scratch blood off of it, or it feels like alligator skin. I'm all for that. Yeah. Let's do something that isn't that common or maybe hasn't been done before.
Yeah. That's awesome. So it's that's limited to 100 copies, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And really this cool. campaign, you know, you miss out on the campaign, you don't get it. Sorry.
That's yeah. That's such a cool idea.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The digital for $5, which is great. Yeah. Always awesome.
Right.
And then there is a fourth. Oh, is that there's a fourth variant cover too, right?
That one's exclusive to Metal Ninja Studios as well.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah.
And this is a trend that's been interesting recently. I mean, for years now, but I find it interesting that the metal covers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do those do for you? Like, do you guys get a lot of people jumping on those? I got to assume so.
Yeah.
Seeing them so much.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think the metal covers have like there's a core group of collectors that are like, do you have metal covers? Do you have metal covers? But every time I go to a signing, I'm like, oh, better grab my metal covers for the, you know, those guys. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. I think it's really cool too. It the book feels nice and it's unique. So yeah, why not?
It's a metal cover, but it's still flexible.
You can still. Yeah. It's just a cover. Yeah. It's like a sheet of like a clear aluminum type thing.
Okay, so, interesting.
Yeah, it really, you know, gives the comic some weight. You can still read it. You know, mm-hmm. it's still regular paper pages in the center. So yeah,
that's really cool.
Say if my books were all put away right now, I'd find one, but yeah, they're
heavy duty.
It's almost just like a shiny, like chrome cover from back.
Yeah, because I'm a sucker for like shiny covers. That's my
Me too.
Mike likes shiny things.
The facsimile covers that come out, and oh yeah, I'm a sucker for that shit. No, that's awesome. I mean, we still have around 20 days left in the campaign. You're at about almost 50% right now, I think.
I think we're about 35% right now.
Okay.
Yeah. Give or take.
And I wanted to, before we kind of wrap up and do our thing at the end here, I did want to bring up one more book that we haven't talked about because it came out in between our last two conversations. You did a comic with your wife.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You did. Yes.
Can I Scream? Yep. Yeah. That was great. Speaking of one shots, that's what this is. It's a book that her, Francesca, and I worked on together. I wrote it. She did the interior artwork, and it was colored by Ruben Corto, who is the colorist on Dream Master, and lettered by Leo McGovern, who also lettered Spill Blood. Been working with him a lot lately. And yeah, this is a cool little, speaking of Stephen King, I call it a love letter to Stephen King's Firestarter. So if anyone's familiar with, you know, the 80s Drew Barrymore movie or or one of the five people that saw the Zac Efron remake, it's
no, sorry. I mean, I'm not one of them.
No one. I saw it on the plane.
okay.
Captive audience. The story is still great. It's still there. This is about a mother and son. They're on the run because the boy has this gift that the, you know, evil government entity want to use for their evil ways. Mm-hmm. And we see like a 24-hour day in their life of what it's like to have to hide this secret, how to have to move from town to town while, you know, juggling that, you know, single mother, angsty, you know, adolescent kid with a gift that just wants to, you know, play video games, but this thing keeps getting in the way and, you know, causing them to live this dangerous, violent life. So it was received really well. It sold out through the publisher and through Diamond, and it's going to go to second print. We'll see that in Diamond, I think, in a couple of months with a new, with a new cover too. So.
Nice.
Well, speaking of metal, well, this cover will have a metal edition when the the second print comes out too. So
awesome!
Yeah,
really cool.
And just out of curiosity, how did this book come? Like, how did you and your wife decide to work together on this? Did you write this and she like claimed it, or like you guys worked together on the story? Or
well,
I know to everybody out there, your wife is a very talented artist who's been published before. It's not like she's just, you know, does it on the side. She's actually a comic creator in her own right.
Right. Yeah. She's a full-time comic book artist. We met through, you know, the comic book community, and, you know, there was a lot of conversation about people asking us, you know, when are you guys going to work together, blah, blah, blah. And it's just not that easy to just, you know, for schedules to line up. And, you know, she can't work for free either. But, you know, she took time to draw this. This is her losing money, you know, because she needs to work. So it had to be like a side project, you know, fitting pages in there when she can. But I had already had the idea a long time ago and pitched it to a publisher. But then, you know, when we were like, okay, let's just do a one shot. I have this idea. I can make that from a mini series into a, you know, a one shot. And that way we can kind of like, you know, when people say, hey, you guys need to work together, we're like, we did. It's this book.
Yeah, you have it. And it's completed. Yeah. Here you go.
Right, everybody leave us alone.
We did it for you.
Yeah, we did it for you. Now leave.
But yeah, it was really cool. It turned out really good. We're super happy with the end product. And we just did like 6 weekends where we were at a different comic book store somewhere in Florida, you know, doing signings for it. And it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. So that's
super really glad to have that experience. And yeah, and hopefully we can do it again.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. That's got to be an interesting experience. And
yeah.
To be working together, and then it's like, oh well, you know, we're coworkers, so we could just go to the same comic shop,
yeah,
whatever, for signings.
So. Yeah, it really helps. You know, it's a, yeah, it's a good sell. You know,
yeah,
it's,
right.
Because for the longest time, we would go to a table, and, you know, like, I have my things, she has her things.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that are kind of new to comics, or it's like, you know, they're casually into comics, you know, yep, they buy something from Francesca and then, you know, ask me to sign it too. I'm like, no, I'm not the writer. I just got, yeah, done spending 30 minutes telling you the difference between us.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
I'm not going to sign your steak comic book.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. It's a great book.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And then they have Francesca try to sign Quicksand, and she's like, no, like we just told you for the past 30 minutes.
Yeah, we just explained.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, me and Mike did a free comic book day years ago.
Oh, like, yeah.
This is in the before times.
Yeah.
And we had a bunch of friends of ours send us books. Well, we asked a bunch of friends of ours to send us books, yeah, and we'd hand them out to our community. And everybody's asking us to like sign them, and yeah, we're just like, we didn't make these. Like,
no,
these
no, are just
friends of
them.
Ours.
Yeah,
these. And are, I remember this one guy who was insistent, like, no, yeah, sign, yeah, it, sign it. So we, there's these random copies of indie some books that have our signatures on it that we had, yeah, nothing to do.
Yeah. With.
I know we had a poster that day we were signing for people, but then it was like, sign the books too. I was like, I didn't. That's yeah, not my name on there. I don't care. Sign it. I was like, all right, okay,
all right, yeah,
all right, I'll sign it. But it's not worth it. It's gonna, you know, make the book worth less.
Yeah, you better hope this doesn't become a movie, or else you're gonna be pissed.
Yeah, yeah, you're gonna be real mad. No, that's awesome. What a cool experience.
Yeah.
So, Brackish on Kickstarter now.
Yes.
You know, go check it out. Go back it. I mean, one of those awesome covers that you like. And Jonathan, I know we talked about your website earlier, but you want to send our listeners or viewers anywhere?
Yeah. Particular? Head over to JonathanHedrickComics.com. You know, I have a lot of links there and information where you can find the rest of my social media platforms. And, you know, there's still a few days left before the nominations for the Ringo Awards is over.
Ooh.
So if you're a fan of Dream Master, that's the one I've really been campaigning for people to nominate. That'd be great if everyone kind of went there and also nominate Francesca for Best Cover Artist. She did some killer covers for a book called Rebel Girls last year that really should be checked down, and, you know, maybe get some a little more appreciation via the awards, you know, ceremonies and stuff.
Yeah. So for some reason, I always thought Ringo's you had to be creator to vote for, but that's anybody can vote, or
for the first, the write-in nominations, it's fans and creators.
Oh,
and then
cool.
Once they finalize the actual, official nominees from that point, when, you know, like when they narrow it down to like five people per category,
yeah,
or five titles, that's when it's creators.
Oh, cool.
Only. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Very cool.
So everybody out there, I will have links to the Kickstarter and Jonathan's website down below, so you can check those out, but make sure to check out Brackish and back that campaign.
Yes.
Jonathan, thank you so much for stopping by once again, man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yep. Absolute pleasure to be here. I really appreciate it.
And we're back.
We're back. Brackish on Kickstarter now. Check it out. Go back it.
Definitely. It is a very good book. As somebody that's not a huge fan of like romance stuff, it does a good job of getting you in and not really like bogging down in the like romance of it, I guess, like,
right,
the over the top, like, oh, you're so beautiful shit.
Yeah, that type of stuff. Yeah,
it's more like, I said it in the interview, but it's more of a meet cute as a presenter.
Comic news. DC Comics announced that for the first time they're publishing a consumer version of the 1982 DC Comics style guide with art and designs by Jose Garcia Lopez. For those that don't know, this was a guide used on all advertising merchandise by the comic creators for many decades. To celebrate this, DC also announced in August their artist spotlight variant covers will be images from the DC style guide. That's awesome. Yeah, so we get all these like portrait styles of the main, you know, DC heroes, Wonder Woman, Flash. I think these are awesome. These are going to make for awesome covers.
great covers, and I'm very interested that they're selling the style guide for the first time. I mean, yeah. This is stuff of legends that people talk about.
Right.
Jose Garcia Lopez is, it's funny because he hasn't done a ton of comics.
Right.
But he's probably one of the most influential artists in the comic industry.
Yeah,
because of the style guide.
Yeah, he really like set the tone for all the characters.
Yeah, like if you know DC, you know his art, because all this stuff was on so much merchandise back in the day that it's just insane. So I'm interested. I want to see what it costs and everything, because it's going to be a big hardcover. Like, I'm not going to pay hundreds of dollars for it, but
right,
dude, that style guide online, because like you said, it's never been released to the public.
Right,
it goes for thousands of dollars.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, insane. Like I think it's cool that they're bringing it, and I like the covers are awesome. Like, I hope they do more of them and keep up that idea.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool idea for covers.
Yeah.
Marvel announced another two additions to their rebooted X-Men line. I think this is like 5 books now.
5.
Is it? Or more than
close
that?
To 12, I think.
12? Holy shit.
The original was 5.
Yeah.
And then we've had this conversation at least 3 times since then.
Yeah. I just feel like every week we're talking about more X-Men books. Wolverine, of course, written by Saladin Ahmed and art by Coccolo. The new run begins deep in the Canadian wilderness where Wolverine... Oh, fuck. We're back with these huge press releases. With his wolf pack, embraces the beast within. But it's like, you could just left it there. That's all I needed to hear. The Wolverine's more than an animal. He's a soldier. Wow. And a new war is brewing as Nightcrawler struggles to remind Logan that he's part of the family. Logan's exile is violently disturbed by his most hated foes. With each battle, a new existential threat gathers strength. The ancient villain has been bubbling under the surface of Marvel Universe since the days of myth. And once unleashed, will dramatically alter the scope of Wolverine's storied history and force him to prove himself a hero like never before. That's not just it, folks. This is a multiple paragraph solicitation. There's a killer in the woods. And as Wolverine's attempt at peace is shattered, an old, I mean, I might as well just read you the whole first issue. An old enemy reemerges. New villain rises that will bring Logan to the brink of his berserker rage. But Nightcrawler knows his friend is capable of doing what's right. And before long, Logan will have to unleash his claws, push his healing factor to the limit, and demonstrate he's the best there is at what he does once and for all. Nice be damned. Wow. Yeah, so... Oh, a note to collectors. This is like some 70s solicitation here. The new series kicks off with a first appearance and a major addition to the lore of Wolverine. So like, speculators going to speculate. In case that didn't grip you, if you want to buy this issue for the speculation of it. What the fuck is going on with these? I think the person who writes these is like trying to like force Marvel's hand of being like, okay, just give them an ongoing book to write because this shit is too much.
The PR guy at Marvel like really wants to write something.
He really wants to write a book.
Good for Saladin Ahmed. Like, I like his work, and
right.
I think he's done a great job in Daredevil and a bunch of other stuff. I'm sorry, he's not in the tier of writer to get me to try out a Wolverine book.
No.
I'm already like teetering on one X-Men book.
Yeah.
And maybe a second. So like, you're already pushing your luck, people.
Yeah, it's a little too much.
But I'm sure Wolverine people are going to be all for it. And I like this cover, like him on top of Animanium skeletons and all
that.
Yeah,
that's pretty
cool.
But this one's pretty cool, too. X-Factor, written by our buddy Mark Russell and art by Bob Quinn. That'll be pretty interesting. Formed by the government in response to post-Krakoa outbreak of mutant paramilitary op squad and mercenary teams, X-Factor will be co-led by Angel and Havoc, which is cool because we don't see a lot of Havoc. It included recruits like Pyro, Frenzy, Feral, and more, part special agents for missions that require an arsenal of superpowers and part celebrity propaganda machine. That's where Mark Russell comes in.
Yep.
X-Factor will wage war against emerging factions like the Mutant Underground X-Term, which is a play on exterminate, I believe. Whether they believe in their actions or just doing it for a check, the members of X-Factor are no fools when it comes to shady politics, as hidden agendas rear their ugly head. They'll fight against the dark consequences and disastrous public opinion from the inside. I'll probably read it because it's a Mark Russell book.
This is the second one I was referring to minutes ago.
Yeah.
It's Mark Russell and it's like a political propaganda squad. Like, yeah. That sounds interesting.
And Havoc's in it. I'm a huge Havoc fan. So
I didn't know that about you. That's interesting.
Yeah. He's just like one of the characters that's, I don't know. He is the 90s to me.
Yeah.
I feel like he was so popular in the 90s and then he went away. They're like, we had too much Havoc. Yeah. now he's slowly coming back.
It's fine, Mike. We have 80 different X-books, so everybody can have a book now.
Yeah, now they can all have their favorite X-Men in a book. Yeah.
I'll be interested to see. I didn't put it in notes, but I was reading a thing recently about like what they're doing over at Marvel and how they're talking. Because Marvel's been very guilty of killing books early.
Yeah.
And they are actually going through a thing where they really want to give books like at least 11 to 12 issues to kind of find their groove. Which so they're actually approving books at that clip.
Wow.
And which is very interesting. Like this book, I mean, assuming that's true, because it is kind of a behind the scenes thing. That means that these books we're talking about here will at least, I mean, Wolverine's going to be on forever, but something like X-Factor at least gets a year of books to kind of find its groove and build an audience.
Which is cool.
And like you said, like it's Mark Russell. So I'll at the very least check it out.
Yeah, you gotta check out a Mark Russell X-Men book.
The other one's the Nyx book with the Hive Mind boys. I mean, I'm not super interested in the story there, but I will try almost anything most guys do. This one, like the story actually interests me, especially since I talk about a lot like the post-Krakoa era and like how you're gonna like put the genie back in the bottle. And this, I hope, actually deals with that, like the hatred that people have for the actions mutants took during that time.
Yeah.
And all that. So
I think it's really, I mean, the best person to write a political superhero book has got to be Mark Russell.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that book he did at DC with Supergirl or I mean Power Girl and
I read it too.
You know what I'm talking about. But that book was awesome.
No, it was really good. Yeah.
He's got My Bad coming out again, which is always great. Like, Next week.
Can't wait. Good for Mark. Boom Studios announced a new series titled Profane. This series will be written by Peter Milligan, art by Raul Fernandez. Will Profane is a seasoned private eye Chris is in and solving murders in sunbaked streets of L.A., and is his daily bread, but something is strange about his last case. Every clue leads him to back to a world-famous crime novelist lying at the center of this mystery and dangerous truths about Profane's own life. Cool.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. I don't know what's going on in this industry where everybody wants to write crime noir books.
Yeah, it's like a huge thing all of a sudden.
Not that I'm complaining.
Yeah.
But
no, it's great.
I feel like every week I get an email.
Yeah, it's
like,
a new one. A
crime noir book, guys.
Yeah, it's another one.
And it's great. So, I'm not the biggest Peter Milligan fan. Like, he's kind of before my time a bit, but the book sounds cool, and I like what Boom Studios has been doing. So, I'll at least be checking this out. Yeah.
And then we're gonna end with some really awful, sad news. A former guest of the show, indie comic creator and lawyer Daniel Martinez. Sadly took his own life. He was 43 years old. When he was on the show, he talked about Hell on Heels. Sorry. Was a huge friend and writer of Travis Gibb. Chris knew him personally, things like that. So awful news, just really sad news this week. Especially because we've talked about this before, with mental health and suicide. It's just like when you get to the point where you feel like there's nobody else to talk to, or at least like, you know, we always wish they would reach out or something like that. That's just got to feel awful for everybody around that person. You know, it's sad.
That's the toughest part, is when you're dealing with this. And like, I learned a little bit more about Daniel. I'm not going to share anything. But I learned a little bit more about his past that I didn't know about, because that wasn't the man I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And The fact that those things were still haunting him and he didn't reach out to anybody about it, not even his wife.
Yeah.
Is tough. Sad. And I got the news like days before the public did because of a mutual friend. And I was in shock because, like I just said, like that wasn't the man I knew.
Right.
And we had talked like weeks before. He was dealing with Hell on Heels and trying to get some of the art finished for it and doing good. And we were, you know, bullshitting about basketball and the Sixers, and he's a big Knicks fan. Mm-hmm. So it sucks. Like, I was becoming friends with this man and we had some interesting conversations. He was always an awesome person to talk to. We had discussed, like, I missed him this year at MegaCon. We discussed, like, next year when I come down, meeting up in person.
Yep.
It hit me really hard because I try to talk a lot about it on this show and just anywhere that people let me talk about it. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, reach out to somebody, try to talk to people.
Yep.
It's always better on the other side. And
yeah,
it just sucks. Like,
yeah. I know. And there's like, for people that don't know, there's so many resources out there too, like hotlines and things like that, that people don't, I know there's always these like, there's always the stigma around talking about it, and it's not the easiest thing to do. But it's so sad to see stuff like this, especially somebody so young.
Yeah. And I bring this up not to be like, not to drive a wedge or anything, but I can only talk from a man's perspective. And I always feel like men in particular, from my point of view, it's kind of ingrained in us not to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be that way. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah, don't keep that going. Right.
Yeah, like, yeah,
normalize talking about it.
You need to talk about it. You need to like feel your emotions and be a person. Like, it's important. And
right.
Sometimes just having an afternoon with somebody, whether it's a friend, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, whatever,
mm-hmm.
to like blurt out your bullshit with or cry with or whatever, like,
right,
could solve this issue. And mm-hmm. yeah, so find someone like that in your life, please. And
I think it's, I mean, we had Daniel on the show recently. I unfortunately didn't get to talk to him, but we're at this point now where the show has been going on for so long that there's been several guests that are now passed away that have been on the show. And yeah. it's almost like when you've been a teacher for 30, 40 years or something, like, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Not all your students are around anymore, or like, you know, you see people come and go, you work with a lot of people come and go out of your life, but we're in an interesting position where we have a chunk of that person's history on our show forever that's there, and we can go back in that moment in time and like listen to them speaking with us in the moment. But it's like, to know that, you know, that talented person that and you know, he was loved by a lot of people, so it's just really sad.
Yeah. And I after I got the news and had my moment, I went through some like old text messages.
Yeah.
Once again, stuff I'm not going to share, but like there was stuff that he sent me that was like, not, it was a combination of our mutual love for comics and sports.
Yeah.
And I was just going through it and I was like, it just made me laugh, like looking at him, because that's the thing that like hooked us up. Like,
yeah,
we're hooked up through our friend Travis, but
right,
what really got us to be like to the point where we were friendly was that conversation. I was just looking mm-hmm. at him like, damn, like that was. It's one of those, he lived this, he was a man from the outside looking in that like he lived the life that we would dream of.
Right.
Like, he was a very successful man and he loved comics. Obviously there was demons deeper than that. So it's also the, don't always judge that just because somebody has this life that you dream of or you think is
it's the best. It's always better, the best thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes they got issues too and they also need to deal with stuff. So,
yep.
Yeah.
Very sad. So,
yeah.
Our hearts go out to Daniel's family for sure.
Yeah. And you can find online, there's it's either Give, Send, Go, or what's the other one? one of those websites. Yeah. GoFundMe.
Yeah.
To help his wife with things. They also have a daughter that's a year old. So
okay. Wow.
There's a bunch of expenses going around.
Okay. Wow. With that, I guess it's we'll talk about what we read this week.
Tough transition.
Yeah, I know. Wow, jeez. We really should have. We probably should have put that after reading. But I don't want to leave on such a sad note, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we don't have to talk about them this week, but we'll spend a little bit of time. I did catch up on some stuff. You had talked about Barbaric Born in Blood last week. Great first issue. I think the part with the dragon, the fat dragon, was awesome and a great reference to D&D. The the Iron Dragon or whatever. Thumberchod, I think, is the actual name of the character in D&D. But yeah, so that's really cool. The whole history of the barbarians, I think, is very interesting, that they have a code to uphold and all that stuff. And the hungover recap from the Battle Axe was amazing.
Yeah.
Catch us right up in the story. So
I love that recap.
Yeah, it was great. Morningstar 2, issue 2. This is the book from
Mad Cave.
Thank you. Andre Daniel writing it with Finnegan on the art. Not much happens in this issue. You know, so the family is in this fire tower. The father's passed away. It's the mom, the brother, and the sister trying to reconcile with what happened. The son goes missing after seeing the dad like floating in like this weird paranormal like spacesuit thing. And the mom is like, I have to stay here and keep trying to call the rangers at the park. So you need to go find your brother. It's like, okay. So she sends the younger sister or the older sister to go find him with like a rifle. And she sees this deer that kind of stops and stares at her. And then later in the issue, the deer we see stand up on its hind legs, almost like it's an alien or something, but she doesn't see that happen. So there's some weird shit going on in the woods, and hopefully we'll see more of that. I wanted more out of the issue. Like, the reveal wasn't that heavy for issue 2.
To be fair, there's always weird shit going on in the woods, I can confirm.
Yeah, true. Can confirm. Batman 147, Zdarsky and Jimenez. Zdarsky doing it again, man. So Failsafe Batman's creating a bunch of amazos. The way he's making the amazos is the multiverse Zurinar minds. So he's making a bunch of amazo Batmans, but they're multiverse Batmans. And so like Damian's been like, you know, hanging out with him, calling him father and all this bullshit. And then when he's like, yeah, I made a bunch more amazos, he goes, amazos are crazy, why would you do that? He's like, no, it's fine, I put the mindset of all the multiverse Batman in there. And he was like, wait. And then that's when he's like, you're not Batman, you're Zurinar. And he's like, oh no. It's like, so then they have falling out. there's a conversation between Failsafe and Waller where he's like, you know, stay out of my way. And then she finds out that, you know, this isn't the real Batman. And Bruce has gone into hiding into a cabin. And then Tim Drake shows up and is like, I'm ready to suit up and help you out. So that's pretty cool. The second story is about the warden that has taken over Arkham Asylum. And the story revolves around Riddler and how he like understands Riddler's always been thwarted, blah, blah, blah. So he hooks him up to like this crazy mind machine. He's like, I can make you stronger. And that's kind of how it ends. So steroided up Riddler to come. Yeah.
I think it's that issue yet.
Zdarsky's been killing it on Batman. And even the secondary stories are great. Yeah. Fantastic Four number 20. This was just another one-shot story. Johnny and the Thing want to start making money, so they like hold various jobs throughout the issue, like, and end up at a grocery store where they have to save the grocery store, and then they become really popular. So it's just a fun issue. This series has been a lot of fun. You know, 1 to 2 issue stories, and there isn't really anything behind the scenes. A couple books I didn't get to this week. I haven't got to Shazam, and I have not gotten to Geiger number 2. But the last book I got to, so
those were the two books that I was about to read before I took a nap earlier, which is
I did take a nap too.
Yeah.
So Chris, I read Dracula Blood Hunt number 1, and then I got to the Blood Hunt May checklist page,
This book right here?
Yeah. But I got to the May checklist page at the back, and I was like, well, you can't. I was like, what the fuck? I mean, there's so many, so many books. I'm not going to read all these books, everybody, but I did read the Dracula Blood Hunt, which was awesome. The story revolves around Blade's daughter has a piece in all of this. Then Chris, I know you're really excited for the issue ends because they're in New York City and Daredevil's chilling there. Like, what are you doing here? I think the Blood Hunt stuff's really cool. We kind of see Blade's daughter really figuring out her powers and how strong she is and how much stronger she's gotten from this whole Blood Hunt thing happening. And Dracula's really cool, and it's interesting, you know, he's trying to stop what's happening. So, but then it's like every book is involved, and I'm probably not going to be reading all of these. But
no, like some of it is like the main ongoing books.
Yeah.
Like it's any event, like
yeah, any
DC does like this, it too. Yeah, like,
yeah.
I am reading a bunch of like the ancillary books. So I had Blood Hunt, Dracula, and then what's the other book I picked up? Was it Blood Hunters? I think.
Blood Hunters number one. Yeah,
yeah. I picked that up. Uh-huh. I won't pick up like Amazing Spider-Man, Blood Hunt, or yeah. something. Like, you know.
Yeah. Right.
But this one in particular is like, it's Dracula. Of course I'm picking it up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I had to read it. I had to know.
I love the issue. Like, even though I don't care for the Blade's daughter thing.
Uh-huh. I thought she was pretty cool in this issue.
She was good in the issue. Yeah. And I like that it was Dracula, like, has some sense of what's going on, but he's mm-hmm. not sure.
Yeah.
And he knows that Blade's involved, but the next best thing is to go for his daughter. And if you go back to like history of Blade, like recent history, that is, like, he's been training with Dracula. He was the sheriff of Vampire Town. Like mm-hmm. he did all these things. Yeah. I really like the Blood Hunt thing. Like, it's been a lot of fun. It's mm-hmm. not going to blow your mind like freaking Watchmen or anything, but it's a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was good. That's all I got to. I had some books that I haven't gotten to yet.
Funny, I have a bunch I didn't get to as well, but it's funny. I finished the week and I'm like, I didn't read that much this week. And then I actually like sit down here to talk about it. And I'm like, holy shit, I read a lot of books this week. Monsters Are My Business and Business is Bloody, issue 1 and 2. We talked to Colin about it.
Oh, yeah.
This is like one of my favorite things Colin's done in a while. 2 issues in. So it's like this guy who's basically a mercenary in this like weird post climate change world. Like acid rain fell from the sky and like the world's just changed. And there's a section of New York City that we think it's New York City, but like it's mm-hmm. pretty obvious that's basically underwater, but it's under acid rainwater.
Okay.
And that's where like the monsters and the evil things live. And this guy is just a mercenary, and he's done all these jobs for the government and all this stuff. And he swore off any jobs for the government. And of course, that's how the book starts, is like, you know, this guy from the government comes, just one more job, we promise you.
One last job.
And what really sells the book is that his best friend is a talking koala with a chainsaw.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that helps.
And they have to go find this asset that's in like that zone, and it turns out to be like this Lovecraftian creature that there are these creatures that are basically created just to be drones for the gods.
Mm-hmm.
And this creature like mutates and actually like develops personality and a brain and everything. And that's what we learned about in the second issue, is like that he had this mutation and is now like sentient and can't just go along to get along.
Yeah.
So that's why he was so important. Well, in that zone as well, there's this biker gang. And the leader of it's this woman that transforms into this giant, like, spider creature. And we find out that that's also the main character's, like, ex-girlfriend. So, like, there's that element. There's action. So it's horror-based. It's, like, Lovecraftian horror-based. Okay, like, all the creatures are Lovecraftian.
Yep.
A lot of action and, like, some humorous moments throughout it to kind of, so it's not like horror in the fact where you're gonna be scared or it's like blood and gore. Mm-hmm. It's just the elements in the world around it. It's really an action comedy.
That's cool.
And I really, really love this book.
Yeah.
So everybody should go check that out. Deadweight's number two from Ahoy. A little bit of a dip from the first issue. Mm-hmm. It's basically like we go to the kind of the Hall of Justice.
Okay.
So to speak. Like, yeah. To put it in terms we know.
Yep.
And we find out that the person in charge there, like, she wants to recruit the two to be heroes with them, but none of the heroes want them there. So they're constantly like undermining them to make sure that they fail these missions.
Okay.
And the issue ends with them in like a prison cell, which is basically a force field underneath the castle. And now they're like, oh, how do we get out of this? So good issue, but like it didn't live up quite as well to the first issue.
Okay.
But I still enjoyed it. Crocodile Black number one. It was exactly as bad as we thought it was going to be.
Oh no!
It's this kid who it's about this kid who obviously has some sort of trauma or issue, like probably autistic or something, mm-hmm. and doesn't get along with his family and decides to go start crime, and like it jumps back and forth between his like home life where he feels left out, and then the whole backlight of COVID just was so uninteresting to me.
Oh yeah.
And he turns out to be like this really famous assassin near the end. It's a weird book. The art's really good. I just didn't really care for the story they were trying to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently I was wrong because everybody bought it because it's going for a third printing already.
Interesting.
I read Brackish. Right. We talked a lot about that at the interview.
Yep.
TMNT Black, White, and Green, number one.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really fun anthology book, and what I liked is every story they pretty much hit every turtle in every story. Like,
oh, that's cool.
They center around one and it all comes back to a main theme at the end of the day, and I really like that. I thought all the stories were good, some better than others, but just overall as a package it was a cool little anthology book. The only thing I'd say is if you're not like, and I don't mean like it'd be kept up with TMNT lore, but if this is like the first TMNT thing you were handed, you'd probably be very confused.
Yeah.
It's more for people that are somewhat seasoned.
Okay.
That's it for... Yeah. So then we talked about Dracula Blood Hunt. From Free Comic Book Day, the Ultimate Universe... Well, Spider-Man, the Ultimate Universe, but I didn't read Spider-Man crap.
That's all right.
It's basically an intro to the Ultimates. And what was really cool is it's Doctor Doom...
Okay.
Iron Lad, which is Tony Stark.
Yep.
And Captain America. And they're going to form the Ultimates. Okay. So they are going to. So Cap's got this plan. He wants to get someone he knows to join the team from back during World War II.
Okay.
And they go into one of these bunkers they find. And it's where, like, basically the Maker keeps his trophies of all the heroes that never were or that he killed. So as they're like walking through, you can see like the sentry's dead body in the background.
And, oh,
like,
okay.
All this cool stuff.
Yeah, that's cool.
At the end of the day, we find out that they're there to reactivate the one true Human Torch, Jim Hammond. And that's when the Maker's like secret agents come and they have a big fight and Hammond activates at right at the perfect moment and all that. It's a super hype little mini story that sets up like what they're going to do with that series. And I really enjoyed it. So if you're interested in the Ultimates, it's a free book to check out.
Nice.
Speaking of Blood Hunt, Moon Knight number five.
Oh, nice.
It's a Blood Hunt tie-in, Mike.
Of course it is.
So last issue, we found out that the Shroud was the guy posing as Moon Knight. This issue has 8-Ball in the therapist chair, which is very fitting for 8-Ball. And it kind of concludes that whole fight. Like, Tigra and I'm zoning who's with her. But they, Hunter's Moon, are fighting Shroud and basically telling him, like, you can't, like, you need to ditch the Moon Knight persona, like you're not Moon Knight. And he's giving this whole soliloquy about how like he wants to recover his image and all this stuff, blah 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 blah. And the fight ends right as Blood Hunt begins, where Shroud is one of the people that's taken and made to create the Eternal Knight.
Oh, okay.
So that's how it all ties in. Yeah, which will be very interesting moving forward with the Moon Knight book now that Moon Knight's out of, you know, commission.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it. I like this Vengeance of the Moon Knight. I'm glad they got to the reveal fairly quick in this. Speaking of Chip Zdarsky.
Oh, nice.
It's the sequel to The White Tree's Black Sand Tale. This is The Whisper Queen of Black Sand Tale.
Nice.
This is his fantasy book. We get this character who was like the ultimate assassin, and he's in prison for some sort of crime. And I forget what the crime was because I read a lot of comics, everybody.
There's a lot. It's a lot up in our heads here.
And we find out that he's being talked to because they have one mission that he would be perfect for, but he like refuses to do it. So now they sent somebody else out. So he escapes, he gets the crew back together, and they're going to go on this fantasy adventure for it.
Yeah.
I mean, I love everything Chip does. I can't think of a single book he's written that I haven't really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you like fantasy action kind of stuff, it's that. It's demon people and high elves and all that kind of crazy shit that you see in fantasy books.
Nice.
That I really enjoyed. A Kickstarter book, Mike.
Oh,
that nice. I'm in.
Oh, yeah, you are.
Tough Stuff, The Toughening Part 2.
Yeah, I remember you got put in that book.
Yeah, it's a really good issue. Like, Kevin's having a bunch of fun with this book. He's got, I think the next issue he announced was going to be Tough Stuff, The Cocaine Special or something like that. Oh my God,
that's amazing.
So, it's just a good time. Like, Tough Stuff fighting a bunch of rich people on a boat.
Nice, love it.
Yeah. If you haven't checked out one of his books on Kickstarter, they're a blast.
Yeah.
And I'm in two of them, so yeah.
Hell yeah.
This time he didn't make me a Fed, so that was nice. Oh,
okay. That's nice. Nice of him.
And then my last book is the new Scotty Young book, Ain't No Grave, number one.
Oh, yeah.
How's that? I really enjoyed it. It's a Western book about this woman who used to be like the big, bad, you know, person out in the Old West. She settles down as a kid. And with her husband, and then she gets really sick and starts like coughing up blood, and she's basically told she has like a year to live.
Okay.
Well, she is unwilling to accept this, so she goes on one last mission wishes of her husband to this town that we find out is this big city at the edge of the world, and that's where death lives. So her plan is to go and kill death.
That's pretty cool.
It's not like it's a new idea. Right. Like, we've done the kill death thing many times.
Yeah.
It's really the world and like how she's portrayed that makes this book interesting.
That's cool.
And if you like Western books and that kind of aesthetic, it's really good. And it's the same creative team that did the Midwest series, the Scotty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Cool.
So that same art style. Yeah.
That sounds cool.
Good stuff. So, Mike, that was everything I read this week. Not a lot, right?
Yeah.
Not a lot. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at Fortress Ricker on Twitter. Where can they find you and or the show?
You can find me at Fortress Chris on most social media, including Twitter. Also at chriscomicscorner.substack.com. You can find the show at fortresscomics_ on Twitter or at fortresscomicnews.com. And to wrap out there, if you want to support the show, like, subscribe, share, comment down below on the YouTube version. 5-star reviews on podcatchers and patreon.com/fortresscomics are the way to do it. Thank you all so much for watching and or listening this week. We'll see you all here next week.
Good stuff.